It's Friday, January 18th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hey, everyone, got a great show for you. TGIF. Yes, it is. Strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central Podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume. Because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central Podcast.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central Podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the beautiful state of Hawaii, from the Geek News Central Studio overlooking Greater Oahu. How's everybody doing? Welcome to the show. Yes, it is Friday. Thank goodness. It's time for the weekend. Got a nice long weekend for most of you out there. And most of you have a three-day weekend for the holiday on Monday. So, wow, what's going on? It's been busy, 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 busy here. Just busy beyond belief. And my office looks like a nuclear weapon has went off. I mean, there would be no office if that happened, but, it's a wreck. And part of it has to do with essentially coming back from CES, unpacking, not putting anything away, and then just being immersed in paperwork and things to do in my schedule. Oh, some consulting. You just name it. It's been crazy. And, I've got a lot of videos that I've been working on and getting coded up and talking with clients from the show. It's just been busy, 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 busy. And quite honestly, it's been one of those weeks where I can hardly breathe. But anyway, got a great show lined up for you tonight. And of course, if you're checking out the show for the very first time, I want to welcome you to the Geek News Central podcast. Again, my name is Todd Cochran. And it is an absolute beautiful time here in Hawaii. It's been cool. The trades are up. It is absolutely gorgeous. Now we've been getting a little bit of rain, so some of the tourists probably aren't real happy about that, but it's just been nice. It really, really has. But, I'm going to be packing up here in about another week and, heading towards the, lower 48. Talk about that here in a little bit in a few moments. But of course, I want to welcome the Ohana to the show. I want to welcome to the long-term subscribers and want to thank you for, staying and continuing to support the show. And of course, if you're a new listener to the show, definitely check out geeknewscentral.com. Check out the third column of the website. You'll find a newsletter link there. Sign up for the newsletter. That'll get you the show notes delivered directly to your inbox immediately following the show. And of course, check out the archive podcast via the podcast link. And of course, all the great content on Geek News Central as well. Well, lots of cool stuff going on. And beyond the mess in my office and working on the CES stuff, I'm kind of a little bit of a breather for me, because I'm not in school right now. I'm taking a little bit of a break. I'm taking at least 3 months off before I take any more classes. Just had to, just too much stuff happening. But it's allowed me to kind of ramp up and get ready for the roundtable we're having this Saturday. So I hope that you'll join us for the roundtable. I'll have details up at geeknewscentral.com. Of course, you can go over to techpodcast.com and click on the blog link. That'll get you the info on how you can attend the roundtable this Saturday, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 Eastern. Andy McCaskey and I are going to be talking about CES, and if we can get someone on, one of the group members that were out at Macworld, we'll have some information on Macworld as well. But it should be a great hour, and as much stuff as we've got to talk about, I bet it's going to go long, but we'll try to hold it to an hour. We'll keep each other's irons to the fire on that. So we hope that you'll join us for the roundtable. Now, let me bring up my calendar here and give you an idea on my upcoming mainland schedule, and it's huge. It really, really is. I'm going all over the place. I'm going to be leaving out of Hawaii here on the 27th of January. I'm going to be heading out to Texas. I'm going to be Dallas, Fort Worth, Waco, Austin area between the 28th, 29th, 30th, and 31st. On the 1st of February, I fly out, and I'm actually going to go visit with my mom for a couple of days in southern Michigan. So I'm going to be like first to the third there. And then from the 4th through the 8th of February, I'm actually going to be down in the Indianapolis area. I'm meeting some people down there. 9th and 10th, my team at Raw Voice is actually getting together. We're having a meeting we do every year, a planning meeting. We're going to have that on the 9th and the 10th. I'm adjusting my microphone here. But after that, I will be available that week to meet up with anybody that's down in the Indianapolis area. Then on the 11th, I fly out to Washington, D.C. I'll be in the greater Washington, D.C. area from the 11th to the 15th of February. Probably flying out of there maybe on the 18th, I think. So I'm going to be 16th and 17th available that weekend to meet up with anyone in the D.C. area. And then on the 18th, I fly. I don't know if I'm going to fly on the 16th or what exactly which day I'm going to fly, but I'm going out to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I'll be in Albuquerque from 19th, 20th, and 21st. Then I wrap up and I get on an airplane and come home to Hawaii on the 22nd. So yes, a very, very busy 25 or let's see, what is it? It's 21, 22. It's about 25, 26 days that I'm going to be out and on the road. And I'll be talking more about that in the near future. But lots of good stuff going on. I'm going to, again, be in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I'm going to be in the greater Washington, D.C. area, Indianapolis, and in the Dallas-Fort Worth, Waco, Austin area there in the, of course, next week. So looking forward, not next week, a week after next. So I'm looking forward to meeting with any of the Ohana that's in that area. Sam, I hope to hook up with you when I'm out in Albuquerque. I know Bree, I want to see you when I'm out in D.C. And I'm actually going to be probably staying in Virginia. But anyone else, if you're in the Indianapolis area, love to hook up with you. And then I am going to be up in the southern Michigan area, of course, that one weekend. So if anybody wants to hook up, drop me an email at geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Of course, you can always leave a question or a comment on the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. So, yeah, very, very busy month, and looking forward to hooking up with my team on the 9th and 10th. It should be a great weekend for us. Let us talk strategy and where we're headed in 2008. And basically, it's kind of where we lock ourselves. We go to a city where there's not a lot to do. And just, to, you know, because if we went to Vegas, we'd all want to go play, right? So we go to a city where there's not a lot to do, and it's generally cold, so we not necessarily want to be outside. And we get a suite, and we lock ourselves in the suite and have top-secret meetings. So I'll probably be putting up some videos or something and have a little fun with it. But it should be a great meeting with the team out there. So what else have I got cooking here? Well, lots of coverage. Kind of an interesting thing. It happened on, I believe, Tuesday morning. I was I'd done the show Monday night and put the show up. And I got up Tuesday morning. Now, a number of years ago, I had signed up for a DreamHost account. And this is when the early days of podcasting, when the really there was not a lot of choices out there for the for media delivery. And I actually think I did it when I was writing my book on podcasting back in 2005. Well, this is before my relationship with GoDaddy was started up. And what happened was is I got a bill Tuesday morning, DreamHost, and I had actually had planned on letting this account die. I think it was up for renewal in April or something like that. But they whacked my credit card for 2 years of service, or actually for like 5 years of service, for like $800. And I guess this happened to like almost all of their customers. They renewed just a huge number. When I checked their message board, there was like 300 comments alone with some pretty upset people. But they whacked my credit card for $800. And while I, wasn't happy about that, they were very quick to say, hey, we're going to fix it. But it took them about 18 hours before I got a notice in the email that the charges had been reversed and, kind of this lighthearted dream host only type of way of saying we're sorry for screwing up. But what company would have such poor, I just couldn't believe it. I really couldn't. You know, think about that. You're not due for a renewal, something you're planning on canceling. And what if those folks had those accounts tied to share check cards or who knows? I'm sure there was a lot of people that got hurt over this. And while I was able to, withstand the whack, what if I hadn't been? What if I, what if my, I do a lot of business with my share check card, my corporate share check card. What if my account had been down lower than this and they overdrafted my account? Wouldn't have been cool. So, it just goes to show you that, some vendors out there really are run loose and fast. And this is just, it was just unbelievable. It really, really was. But anyway, what have I got here for you tonight? Let's take care of a little business. As many of you are already aware, you know that our roundtable on Saturday is sponsored by GoToMeeting. And while you get a chance to see how the application works and the true, true business purposes of it during the event, how we hand off between different people, we use the tools that are allowed to highlight stuff and point things out. I did get an email from a listener of the audience who provided me a testimonial, and I was going to have it ready to just basically read to you tonight. But what it basically boiled down to is the listener said, "Hey, Todd, we were looking to save money. We wanted to see how this conferencing solution worked, this meeting solution worked. And they tried it out, and the guy's boss was really happy with the application, very impressed, and they went ahead and paid for a subscription after doing a 30-day free trial. And I'm real glad we got some people turned on, and the listener got some brownie points with his boss. And I think all of you, if you're looking to, help your company save money that you're working with, or even do things on your own where you can have meetings online, you need to try it out. So you can get a free 30-day trial by visiting gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. That's gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. Again, a free 30-day, no credit card trial. You can try GoToMeeting free today. And of course, I want to thank our long-term sponsor here, GoDaddy.com. And just a few minutes ago, I talked about this bad experience I had with DreamHost and their overbilling, an account that I wasn't even using anymore. I've never had that problem with GoDaddy. GoDaddy's been my dedicated web hosting, a dedicated server, virtual dedicated servers, domain name register, you name it. I get all my domain name products and a lot of my net products through GoDaddy, and they've always been there for me. They never caused me an issue. And when I do have an issue, technical support helps me out. And it's been a great, great product to have. So when you get a chance, and if you're looking for a virtual dedicated server, a shared hosting account, domain name, whatever it may be, check out GoDaddy.com. And if you choose to pick up something, when you get to that checkout counter, use the promo code TODD. That'll save you 10%. On your order. Geek5 will save you 15% on orders of $20 or more. Todd20 will save you 20% on 1 year shared hosting accounts, okay? And if you combine that with multiple years, it's even bigger. Great, great deal. So thanks to GoDaddy for being a sponsor here at Geek News Central. All right, got a lot of stuff for you. And I'm looking at the audio is sounding a little off tonight. I wonder if my little man has been in here tweaking on the knobs a little bit, but I have no time to go through and double check everything. And I am having a little bit of a problem with my microphone stand. I think the springs in it are getting old, so I think it's about time to order a new a microphone holder. It's just, I hate to do that. This thing's like $80, but when the microphone's drooping on you, it's no fun, and it distracts me from doing the show. So, as always, folks, make sure you send your comments in to geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com, or call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Well, as you all know, I have had a big, big beef with AT&T for a long time. I canceled them as my long-distance carrier. I've had I refused to run them as a mobile service. I've got an iPhone that's running T-Mobile. And it's just because of all the stuff they've done, and here we go again. There's a report over on a bits.blogs.newyorktimes.com talking about how AT&T is getting into the act of maybe starting to sniff its data stream. So it appears that AT&T has been talking to companies like the MPAA, the RIAA, and they're looking to do digital fingerprinting of traffic that's going through their site on a network level. Now, up to this point, ISPs, big carriers like this, they've been exempt from essentially lawsuits because they said, hey, we don't know what's going on our network. But now AT&T is considering to start sniffing their network. And this really bothers me. It really, really does. That they would go to this level to support, you know, companies like the MPAA and the RIAA. Now, what I think it boils down to, let's be very honest here. I think what it boils down to is that they're in a bandwidth crunch. I think they're starting to have more bandwidth than they can handle, and they're looking for a way to essentially stifle some of the traffic that's going on the internet now and saying that they are going to start sniffing traffic. Now, if they're going to filter copyrighted material at the network level, this means that if you try to download something and that content passes through the AT&T network, which many of you probably don't even realize you're doing, but many of you probably cross the AT&T network when you're surfing the internet, this could be a bad thing. You know, if AT&T starts really just, you know, cutting content, how are they going to discern between what's DRM, what's actually copyrighted material, and what isn't? Imagine if this show was uploaded and it had some sort of a similar fingerprint to some other show that was actually copyrighted. What would happen? Would it mean that you would not be able to get this show? Absolutely. So they're going to start sniffing packets, looking for material that infringes on someone's copyright. Now, what are they going to do with that? I don't know. But it's pretty scary here what they're being considering doing. And we got to look at this because for a long, long time, you know, internet service providers have not, looked at traffic. But now AT&T, of all companies, I shouldn't be surprised, is going to become a traffic cop. Now, I do like something here that is actually written up. It says, At a small panel discussion about digital privacy at the NBC booth at the Consumer Electronics Show, representative from NBC, Microsoft, several digital filtering companies, and telecom giant AT&T discussed whether the time was right to start filtering for copyrighted content at the network level. This is scary. It really, really is. Now, let's continue on here a little bit. And actually, we'll talk about something that Time Warner's doing here in a few moments. But we talked about the ICANN, Network Solutions on the last show and how they were essentially people that are going over there and doing a domain search and wasn't registering the domain. Then Network Solutions was actually picking the domain up themselves. There's a good article on eWeek.com talking about how the ICANN could kill two birds with one stone. And simply, all they have to do is really impose some small fees. What they're doing, what these network registers are doing is that they're essentially going out and grabbing domains, holding them for a certain amount of time, and then releasing them. What this is called is front running, or actually domain tasting. They go out and taste a domain, they see if it's getting any traffic. The ones that are getting any traffic, then they register them, then they usually point them at pages that either have pornography or have pop-up ads or banner ads, you name it, in a scheme to make money off the traffic coming from those. So it costs these registers nothing. And you can spend, I think it costs like $10,000 you have to put up front to become a register, and you have to go through some approval process. But I think people have set up registers for the simple purpose of tasting domains and making that part of their business model. Well, they think, at least in this article by Larry Seltzer, he says, if the ICANN simply implemented a 20-cent per domain that would be assessed each and every time a domain was deleted, in other words, if you go out and an ISP or someone would taste some of these domain names, Let's say they taste 100,000 of them. Well, let's say they want 998,000 of them to be returned and not registered. And if they have to pay 20 cents per domain, they feel that this could lower the number of domains that are being essentially tasted each month. They said that in April, data from VeriSign shows that in April 2007, three registers alone each created over 9 million domains and then deleted nearly all of them within the grace period. The effect is so huge that the majority of domain registrations in the last year were for tasting purposes. It's pretty sad, isn't it? It's pretty disgusting in a, if you really think about what they're doing, because there may be some legitimate domains out there that you want, that you wanted to build upon, and guess what? Maybe they're not available at all because someone's out there domain tasting. The problem is with this domain tasting is they'll domain taste it, they'll release it. Then a couple hours later or whenever the clearance time is for the domain to clear, they'll grab it again and taste it for the other time. So they kind of keep it in limbo. They never have to pay for it, but at the same time getting the traffic benefits that those domains may provide. And it's all automated. It's all done by software. I think that ICANN, if they really wanted to put a stop to this, have some sort of mysterious computer glitch that forced these folks to keep those domains and pay the actual registration fee. That would solve it in a hurry. Now, you wouldn't see this kind of activity continue, or even just this 20 cent per domain access fee for a deleted domain. And they're saying that at 9 million domains a month, that comes to $1.8 million. So that's pretty, you know, that's pretty good money for, you know, if you really think about that, it's pretty good money that the ICANN could put to use for different purposes. So anyway, that's enough on that. All right, let's talk just a minute about net neutrality. And this is in relation to a paper that has been released about Akamai. And those of you that don't know what Akamai is a company that essentially provides as a CDN. They have a distributed network where they have essentially computers all over the country and the world that are essentially in clouds connected to high-speed internet pipes. And generally, they serve up either downloads or media or movies. A lot of companies like Microsoft will use Akamai to distribute like service packs. So when you go out and you're looking to do an update or there's patches that are going to be made available, what Microsoft has done is contracted with Akamai or another CDN, and I'm not saying this is exclusive to Microsoft, so I'm just using this as an example. They go out there, and when you reach out for that file, it says, oh, Todd, you're in Hawaii. The closest Akamai server is in Honolulu. So it goes to the Honolulu server, and it redirects it to the Honolulu server, and I grab the data from Honolulu, and I backpull it into my home here. Now, what that has done is essentially, even though I went out and made the request from Microsoft on Microsoft Server Farm, Microsoft has lightened the load by moving that file one time to the Honolulu server so that when everyone in Hawaii is trying to get that update, they're pulling that file just that short haul distance. Now, what Akamai does is they pay for their bandwidth. They're usually on a single network or two, or they have their own. They have peering arrangements with different companies, and they pay for that peering arrangement. Well, it's the same way with ISPs. When an ISP is out, in other words, not necessarily an ISP, but a company like AT&T or Sprint or MCI or World, you know, all these different companies that have lots of fiber, lots of backbone, have major servers on the internet and are, you know, have big points of presence. Well, they make agreements with different, with these companies to essentially interconnect. So that when, let's say, for example, traffic from company A, it needs to get through company B to get to a customer on company B. So the traffic comes into essentially a router. The router says, oh, yeah, I've got a peering arrangement with you. I'm going to go ahead and continue to send your traffic on to your customer. But sometimes what happens if the peering arrangement doesn't happen is it'll hit the router and say, oh, no, you can't come this way because I don't have a peering arrangement with you. You have to go another way to get to my to that particular customer. So they maybe have to go a different route. And that's kind of just, you know, a rough idea on how peering relationships work. It's important that all companies have, or all these big companies have peering relationships because, you know, traffic flows back and forth. And hopefully what they want to happen in a peering relationship is that the traffic is generally equal in both directions. Some companies that are famous for hosting like porn sites and that type of stuff, they've been famous to be on networks that essentially push a lot of traffic but don't actually get a lot of traffic in return, which causes companies like AT&T and so forth to get upset with this particular company. So I'm not just, you know, I'm using some kind of some rough examples here, but what has happened is that there's been a paper put out, and I guess I don't know if it's sponsored by AT&T or what, but what AT&T wants to do is it wants to go out to an Akamai and basically make them double dip. In other words, oh, you're going to pay for your bandwidth, but you're also going to pay for the bandwidth across my network. You know, basically, they want to make some of these companies pay for bandwidth twice. So in other words, I go out, it's just like you go over to geeknewscentral.com, you click on the podcast link, you start downloading the file, and what would happen is they would say, oh, Todd, you're pushing too much traffic through my network, so you're going to have to pay a toll to get your traffic through my network to get it to your customer. Even though you've already paid that same carrier, let's say you're an AT&T customer, you've already paid for that to get that data. So they get it both ways. You know, they charge you a subscription fee, and then they charge me a toll to get through. Now, that's what net neutrality is kind of about in a tightly cohesive package, I guess. And it's not a perfect description, but essentially they're double dipping. Okay, they're double dipping in internet charges. They're getting it on both ends. So they're making out big, you know. They're getting twice the income for a single packet moving across their network. And it becomes very expensive for me to move traffic. And while it doesn't affect you a lot, it's basically make me say, oh, I can't afford to move my traffic through AT&T. So no, I'm not going to pay your toll. And it's not going to happen. Well, they used Akamai as an example of essentially how that net neutrality has never been in place on the internet. And I want you all to read this guy's article. And I also want to reach you the link up on TechDirt to understand where the difference is. And I agree with the TechDirt folks that the guy that wrote the article about Akamai, I don't think he even understands what Akamai does. And I think it's important that you all understand that we have to watch what these companies are saying, because, you know, they may be trying to backdoor stuff as far as charges and bandwidth throttling, and you name it, just like we're talking about earlier on them monitoring traffic that's coming through their network. We need to really start looking at our rights as citizens to, you know, don't fall for some of these tricks these companies are playing. We need to complain. And it's the same thing with Time Warner. Time Warner has announced, and I feel sorry for any of you that live in this town in Texas. And I'm sure what it is, I'm sure it's a town in Texas that has got a very small population that probably aren't big internet users. And this is my guess what Time Warner's doing here. But they're doing a test to say, oh, if you bust our bandwidth limit, yes, they're doing a test on bandwidth limit, where they basically are saying, let me go ahead and bring up the article here. They're doing a trial to implement charges for folks that are in Beaumont, Texas. And if you go over their allotted amount of bandwidth that they're giving you, you're going to get charged. And it could be as much as $30. Let's say you have a Apple TV on your system or a Vudu box and you want to download a movie from Apple, or you want to get one from Vudu, well, you're going to pull that data through your ISP, right? And then you usually pull a movie file. It's a pretty big file. Let's say I want to pull a high-def movie off my Vudu box. It takes 4 hours to download, so it gives you an idea how big the file is. Well, Time Warner is saying, hey, we're going to put some bandwidth caps on for these customers. And if you go over this amount, you're going to get charged. Now, listen carefully. If you are a Time Warner customer and you have a blog, you need to scream in outrage on even the consideration of what they're doing here. All right, so this is essentially their attempt to make us pay for any bandwidth that we use that over the amount that they think we should be using. And they essentially said like 30 gigs. They're going to give people like 30 gigs. You go over 30 gigs, then you're going to get stuck with a big bill. And I move a lot of traffic, folks. It's all legal. I push a lot of traffic. But this is a sign that they are in the mood here to start squeezing us on bandwidth. 30 gigs is not that much. It really, really isn't if you think about it. You know, I have on my server, my primary server for Geek News Central, I have it set for a bandwidth of 1,000 gigs a month. And I use about 600 or 700 gigs a month just for web traffic on that server. And that's not including the podcast traffic, okay? So, you know, if I'm moving that much on that box, then how much am I moving here at the house by downloading movies that I have paid for or legally can watch? What this essentially is Time Warner is scared to death of the video on demand by those devices like the Apple TV and Vudu. They want you watching TV on their TV. They don't want you watching TV via a download through their internet where they don't get a dime. We need to nip this in the bud immediately. We need to scream, holler, complain. You need to call your Time Warner cable outlet. You need I'm serious. If we don't get very outrageous with them and protest, it won't be very long before you are going to have to pay a much, much higher internet bill because Time Warner wants to be assured that you're not going to go out and get a box like an Apple TV. You're going to get a Vudu box. They don't want you watching any TV on your computer. They don't want you using a Windows Media Center. They don't want you streaming audio round the clock. They want you on their channels. And if you do, they're going to charge you heavily for it. Heavily. And they're saying that this on this pricing structure, an average movie on the plans that Time Warner is suggesting here, if you go over their limits, could cost you big, big money. Okay? And they're saying here, I'm going to read from this. Mr. Dudley said the company was still working on what to charge people who exceed the limits. But he pointed to Bell Canada, which has imposed bandwidth limits on its customers. According to its website, Bell Canada charges as much as $7.50 Canadian for each gigabyte when customers exceed 30 gigabyte limit on a plan that costs $29.95 Canadian dollars, since the average high definition movie is 4 gigabytes to 5 gigabytes, that would mean a charge of at least $30 a download for customers on a plan like that who are over the limit. So it doesn't cost them very much. I think if on a good CDN, on a good, it should cost on to move a gigabyte of traffic, it's 15 to 22 cents a gig is what it really is, basically the baseline cost. And for companies like Time Warner, who have their own network, it's really, you know, it's nothing because they've already built it out. It's in their infrastructure cost. So many of you that listen to the show that are overseas, you're like, I'm Todd, I'm already paying for this. You know, if I'm in Canada, I've got limits. But we don't have that here in the United States yet. And we need to be very aware of what's going on here. I will be I'll be very honest. If Time Warner does this, I'll drop their service like a heartbeat. I'll cancel the TV. I'll cancel everything. I will leave them completely. I would rather suffer on DSL than have to pay extortion from this company over this. We really need to watch this, and you need to get on the phone and call Time Warner, call your customer service people, say, listen, I hear you're doing a test on, you know, paying for bandwidth overages out in Belmont, Texas. You need to protest, vehemently oppose what they're doing and just say, no, if you do this here in this state or my in this district, I'm leaving. I'm going to leave your company. I'm not going to be a customer no more. This is the only way we're going to stop them. It's coming. This is what they're trying to do, folks. Okay? It's on the New York Times website. All right? We really need to get our act together here on this. Blog it. Tell your friends. Tell family members that this is a potential thing that could come. And use the analogy that if you're going to download a high-definition video, which you can do today and pay for that legally and watch it on your computer or on your TV, that it could cost as much as $30 to download that movie on what they're discussing here in this plan. They're just testing the waters. They're going to see if people complain. And we need to complain, folks. We really, really do. All right, I've spent a lot of time on this. But I think it's important that you understand the ramifications of not complaining. Okay? Now, those of you that are on Comcast, all you have to worry about is using too much and they just cut you off. But this is a whole different game here. They're talking about charging you for going over a limit. All right? Okay, in PC World, there's an article about, is Microsoft cracking down on DVD ripping? It appears that in the beta release of Vista SP1, the service pack disabled an application that's been used by this particular author in ripping DVDs. It's called DVD4.3. It's a DVD4.3 is a free utility that disables a DVD's content scramble system. In other words, the copy protection technology. And once a DVD's copy protection is disabled, you can copy its contents using one of several third-party programs. Now, if you use this to back up your DVD or whatever it may be for, it appears that there may be some crackdown on this and some change by Microsoft in Vista Service Pack 1. The jury's still out on this, and he's trying to get more information. But we just need to have you be aware if you're going to get ready to do that service pack upgrade when it's available, if they've, you know, essentially blocked this from happening or blocked you from being able to rip DVDs, you need to be fully aware of that. All right, a little info out of Plano, Texas. And actually, Plano's, I believe, a little bit north of Dallas. Personal information on about 650,000 customers of JCPenney and up to 100 other related retailers could be compromised after a computer tape went missing. So if you are a JCPenney customer, you may want to watch your JCPenney card and you may want to watch your actual credit report. There's no JCPenney here in Hawaii, but I've had a JCPenney card for years. Never really ever canceled it, haven't used it in years, so I just wonder if my Social Security number and everything else is sitting out in some criminal's hands now. Pretty unnerving when you see these reports, but it just happens way, way, way too often. All right, we got a little bit of thing to worry about here. In 20 to 40 million years, a massive cloud of gas is on a collision course with the Milky Way. Well, it's really not going to affect us, but the distance isn't really going to cause much of an effect either. But this massive cloud of gas is going to trigger a new round of star formation when it arrives. Astronomers reported last week the cloud is called Smith's Cloud and 7,000 light years long and to collide with our galaxy in 20 to 40 million years. So this is interesting, huh? Yeah, we're on a collision course with a gas cloud. So what do you think about that? That's kind of unnerving. What do you think about that? This gas cloud is 11,000 light years long and 2,500 light years wide. You know, we are so absolutely insignificant when it comes to anything as it's compared to the universe. When my kids were out at the beach with me and my son was like, Dad, you know, how do we compare as, to the rest of the universe? And I was like trying to figure out a way to explain it to him. I said, pick up a piece of sand. And he did. And I said, now brush your hand off so you only have one piece of sand on your fingertip. And he did. And I said, I said, we probably represent a very small portion of that piece of sand in our own galaxy. You know, probably in an anatomic level. That's what, you know, us as individuals represent. And he kind of got to thinking, but he looked at me kind of funny. And he said, wow, Dad, that's pretty deep. And I really didn't have any other way to really, and I'm sure it's even probably smaller than that. But in the scheme of things, we are so insignificant out here that, you know, we could get, it's just amazing how space works and the things that are out there and what looks so beautiful could be just so devastating if the Earth would ever happen to be in the path of something like this. And we'll see, 20 to 40 million years. I don't think any of us will have to worry about that that's listening to the show. But it is a it is curious to see what scientists are pulling out of their hat and what they're talking about and the ramifications thereof. All right, first Mercury flyby images released. The Messenger product, the Messenger Project has released the first images taken by the spacecraft as it flew past Mercury on Monday. And the images transmitted back to Earth early Tuesday show regions of the planet not previously observed before. And there's a press release over at messenger.jhuapl.edu. So I'll have the link up to this notice in the show notes. All right, those of you out there that are Blogger users at blogger.com, you will probably have noticed already that there was a major outage on Blogger. And a lot of people were complaining about it, but looks like they were back online late today, but it was out for quite a while. So big service like that, surprising it was down. It's, I wonder if Google's even paying attention to what's going on with Blogger. I don't think they have too much invested in that, even though they, you know, they own it. I don't know how much they actually do to take care of it. Now, Violet Blue, some of you may or may not know this, but Violet actually wrote some articles on Geek News Central a while back, and it's been quite a while, maybe 2 years, but she was out at Macworld, and she was actually doing some stuff for her show, and she was on the Macworld floor, and she ran into Steve Jobs. And basically, he was standing there looking at his phone or something, and she essentially walked up to him and asked for a picture. And he turned to her and says something about her being really rude and turned his back on her. Now, what was more interesting was that this immediately made it up on the Blogger wires when Robert Scoble had run into her a few minutes later and actually put a live video interview up of the kind of the encounter. It was kind of lighthearted discussion, but here's a simple thing that Steve Jobs, you know, here's a gal, it's a big fan. She's a fan, big Mac fanboy, gal, fan gal, and she's, you know, she's been real, ranked real high in the podcast list in iTunes. And, of course, he probably didn't know who she was. But here you have a situation where a CEO has basically, you know, stuck his nose up at a diehard fan. And some people that were around him were kind of like giggling. And, you know, it was kind of like she got insulted. But Robert Scoble interviewed her a few minutes later, and this thing got up on Dig, and it got like 20,000 views within like the first hour or two, and it actually killed the service that Robert was pushing content to. They had to call their bandwidth provider to open up the bandwidth on that. Now, how much bad press did this guy get just by not saying, yeah, sure, I'll take a picture with you and take 20 seconds. And I'm sure he gets bugged all the time. Okay, but this is a digital age, folks. You make someone mad or you snob them at an event, and you're going to have a major press problem right off the bat. Today's digital age does not afford CEOs to act like they're all high and mighty. And especially, you know, they're there at Macworld. Obviously, they've spent some money to go. And, you know, and he just snubs her nose at her and turns his back honor. So it's an interesting perspective, and I'll have a link up to Violet's website over at tinynibbles.com. All right, upgrade your Google Analytics. If you're using Google Analytics, those of you that are blogging out there, there's a new version of Google Analytics. It's got a new JavaScript code, and it's a complete rewrite of the tracker, and inheriting some of the urchin acquisition products, or some of the actual data that they collect now within the new Google Analytics. So make sure you get your scripts updated, and you'll get some better performance out of it, as well as some more detailed information about traffic to your website. Now, I've just ordered, for some consulting I'm doing, I've ordered a Dell laptop. It's a separate laptop I need to keep separate, and it's a Dell XPS M1530. I got it all decked out, and I just got the standard black one. I didn't get the red one or any strange color. But, you know, lo and behold, they ordered that for me. Actually, I didn't order it. The people I'm doing the consulting for did the ordering. And I see on CNET where people are getting shocked by this laptop. I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, did I pick a winner or what? But those with the XPS M1530 and the XPS M1330, with the, I guess, the brush metallic finish. And I don't know if mine's actually got a metallic finish or not. I'll find out when I get it. But they're actually getting shocked by the thing. They're touching it, and there's some sort of prong problem or whatever. Dell hasn't said too much about it yet. This will be my first Dell laptop in years. I'm a big HP fan, but this had the performance I needed and the size I needed. But anyway... I'll let you know how that laptop works out, and I'll let you know if I get shocked when I get it. Now, those of you that use Digg, it's been pretty much well proven now that Digg has their own secret set of moderators that go through and moderate content, and it basically is driving what makes it to the top and what doesn't. So I wonder what you guys think about that. If with Digg having moderators, really, is it any better than any other service that's out there? You know, are they, you know, it could be agenda driven, and articles could be artificially pushed to the top. It bothers me a little bit, and I don't know if I'm going to be so supportive of Digg in the future over this. I'll be honest with you, never ever have had I've had a Digg events where it drove a lot of traffic, but nothing that I was really, you know, nothing over 50,000 hits in a single day. Really not that big of a bump in traffic when an article that I've written has gotten digged pretty high. And I'm talking about 500 or more digs. So, I don't know. How many of you have seen, what kind of traffic have you seen from something you've dug or something that you've posted that got dug and then driven traffic back to you? Have you seen good traffic from Digg before? I just don't think it's worth it anymore. I really don't. You know, every once in a while there's some good content on there, but for the most part, yeah, I don't find that much. Great article over on the Daily Galaxy: black hole spinning near the speed of light. I'm not even gonna discuss this. You guys have to read this article. This is, if you're not subscribed to the Daily Galaxy, I've been subscribed to this site for a long, long time. If you're not, please do. Please subscribe to it. He has lots of great articles on space and the phenomena that goes on. This is no exception. This article that he released on January 16th is awesome. Black hole spinning near the speed of light. It's an amazing read. It really is. It's very short, but check it out. Same thing with that. You can go over to badastronomy.com. There's a great article about how a reporter twisted a comment someone had made about SETI. No, SETI has not made contact, but apparently some reporter had been talking to a guy that had worked with SETI or affiliated with SETI, and basically said, yeah, there's, the guy didn't say it, but the reporter interpreted it as like, yes, ET made a call. Basically, the guy said, yeah, we hear stuff all the time from deep space that's, you know, is natural, and, you know, it's basically, this guy's like, oh, that means ET's called. So, it's kind of funny. It really, really is. But you know, you never know. It could be misinformation as well. All right, for bloggers, the hottest computer at Macworld was not the Mac. The Blogger Lounge, which I must admit looks a heck of a lot better than the Blogger Lounge that was at CES. Matter of fact, it looks a lot more comfortable. The big fan at Macworld was the one laptop per child laptop that was in the inside the somebody had at Macworld. So everyone was pretty impressed with it. So we're still looking for ours. We're still looking for all five of the laptops to show. The other two have been dealt with by OLPC, so we're just waiting for all of them to arrive. So, gosh, seems like forever, doesn't it? All right, it appears there was some sort of a little bug with iTunes. It was allowing people that were renting movies through iTunes to essentially get pretty long life on the viewing time instead of just 24 hours. So they don't know if it's been, if that hole's been plugged up or not, but I'll leave this article linked up and you guys can check it out in the show notes. All right. A little bit of information on the RIAA. I'm not going to go into that too deep. I'll have that up there, but it's basically a defendant has scored a double victory in court. So it's pretty cool. There's a good article over on Engadget. It's a survey. Now, Mac users, please deflate your heads a little bit here. Survey finds Apple users have a sense of superiority. No, wait, hear us out. That's how it's listed in the title of this article on Engadget. So it appears that Mac users have a superiority complex of some sort, or they feel that they are superior. So kind of curious, and they do this in an off-tone way. I think you'll get a chuckle out of the article. But have you ever noticed that many Mac users, they do walk with a little taller step? I think part of it is because the Macs are a lot lighter, and the guys that are carrying PCs, they're weighted down more. Oh, gosh. But I did see in the bloghouse, I did see a resurgence of PCs. That made me feel pretty good. There was a core group of us that were still pretty much hardcore PC users. All right, contact lens with circuits, lights, a possible platform for superhuman vision. Imagine putting in a device that looks just like a contact, but really allows the eye to have like this bionic type of view. In other words, you can really, it really cranks up the magnification. So this is kind of interesting here, what they've done here. They're saying looking through a completed lens, you would see what the display is generating superposed on the world outside. So it essentially is a screen that's, it would be displayed to your eye, but it would give you this a huge view. So it's pretty cool what they've done here. The prototype device contains an electric circuit as well as red light emitting diodes for display, though it does not yet light up. The lens were tested on rabbits for up to 20 minutes, and the animals show no adverse effects. Okay, for on a rabbit, put the dog on. It's just it looks like a contact lens. Put it on a person. Come on, for goodness sakes. Let's see what happens here. It says the prototype contact lens does not correct the wearer's vision, but the technique could be used on a corrective lens, and all the gadgetry won't obstruct a person's view. So this is kind of cool. It looks kind of weird, though, on the rabbit's eye. So I'll let you have a look at this on the show notes. All right, big, big, big news. Anybody got a bricked iPhone? Well, the firmware version 1.1.3, some people have been able to recover their bricked iPhones. Have the link up to that in the show notes. So that gives you an idea that you might be able to save your iPhone from a destiny worse than death. In other words, a trash can. Miro gets a refreshed version. It's I downloaded it today to play with it, and wow, good update. So it's been refreshed to version 1.1. BitTorrent's been dramatically improved. They really did a good job in getting this product updated. All right, what else have I got here? Oh, big deal on OpenID. Yahoo has implemented OpenID. It's a huge win for the project. Those of you that are OpenID fans, we're starting to implement some of it over at Raw Voice and on our generator product. So in the near future, you'll be able to log on with an OpenID on any of our sites. A site that we're getting ready to launch here in the next week or so is going to have OpenID used in the forum section. It's a little back-end project that we've been working for a while, and we're excited to put it online. It's essentially going to be a great resource for podcasters and those in the new media space. Okay, how many of you have ever said, well, I got out of bed on the wrong side this morning? In other words, means you're grumpy. I'm sure everyone said that. Well, there's an article I'm going to link to that talks about there might be an actually correct side of the bed that you'll want to get out of. So you don't get out on the wrong side of the bed. So I have that linked up in the show notes. Also, I have linked up here an article from Mark Cuban talking about The Album Is Dead. It's a good write-up by Mark. And that's all I got for essentially news commentary. But I got a pile of voicemails here that came in. You guys did a huge job on the voicemail line. I will ask, some of you have doubled up on comments. And while I love you to send me comments, I'm only going to be able to play usually one on the air. So what I'll do is I'll pick one of the two or three, depending on what you've called. If it's really compelling, I'll play both. But I know I got a couple of voicemails this time back to back from people on different subjects. So I apologize in advance if I don't play them all. It's just a matter of time and everything else. But let me go ahead and get into the first comment. I actually previewed these tonight because there were so many. I think this is Tom in Chicago. Don't quote me on this, but let me go ahead and fire this up.
Hi, Todd. It's Tom calling from Chicago.
Yeah, I was right.
Hey, I just want to let you know how cool it was to watch you and Andy McCaskey out at the CES show. And I got to let you know that back channel that you guys did was great. I was enjoying that actually more than the professional put-on spots. Those were great, too. But Andy did a great job at really showing what was how just everything that went into going out to the show. And I know you may have a lot of listeners out there that don't watch that video or are not going to watch those videos. I really recommend it because you guys did so much out there and really cool to see. So I definitely recommend you guys putting that back channel out next year, just because it was so. Very cool. Very cool to see. So, nice. It was a nice, different added flavor to the show, and let Andy know he did a great job. Very enjoyable. I didn't realize Andy was from Indiana. I haven't watched all of it yet, and I'm watching a little bit each night. But it was so cool. He was driving around. I think he was going to Menards. I heard the same news station I listened to here in Chicago in the morning, so it's pretty neat. So you guys did a great job. Welcome back home. Good to have you back home, and you guys did a great job. So thanks for putting that out there. And I already bought a domain name at GoDaddy. And,
beautiful.
Yeah, I've also checked out what Nosby's got over there, too. So thanks again, Todd. It's really enjoyable. I haven't gone through it all, and I'm looking forward to getting through it in the upcoming weeks. Take care.
Hey, Tom, thanks so much. And Andy's from Elkhart, and it's kind of strange. We're like from his house to my back door is where I grew up is like an hour. So it's kind of funny. And Andy's a great guy. We're kind of both of us have a little different approach in how we interview people. And it kept it very entertaining. There were certain things I just knew I didn't want to do interviews on, and where he was like, oh, yeah, I want to do this. You know, his engineering type personality kind of fit well. It was a good give and take. And, of course, the back channel stuff, the morning breakfasts, I think, were the best. Now, he covered a lot of stuff. He had that thing on a lot. And sometimes I was like, come on, Andy, we got to keep moving. And he's like, no, we got to get this for the back channel. And I do appreciate all the work Andy did on that. And, there's so much stuff I have to put out. You guys haven't even seen a tenth of everything. And I really got to start pushing some videos out. And I will do that this weekend. You keep watch at geeknewscentral.com. And I'm going to be hammering some videos out this weekend. Cause I just got to get them online Because here we are, it's almost, we're approaching a week already since the show is over. And, I gotta get him out there. So, Tom, thanks for that. And, yeah, check that back channel out. You can find it at techpodcast.blip.tv. Thanks for the comments, Tom. Appreciate it. Okay, here's the next, audio comment.
Hey, Todd, it's John Lakewood.
Hey, John.
I love the show. Love the CES coverage.
Thanks.
Two thoughts. One, I wouldn't cut up the back channel video. I looked at it. I didn't mind an hour watching of it. Or if you want to cut it up, but I'd leave the originals for some of us that really were intrigued at how bizarre and how many people were there and what you guys had to go through. I found all of it really pretty interesting because I've always wanted to go to CES, and now after seeing the crowds and hearing that there's over 150,000 people to attend, I'm not so sure I want to be in that. So that's my first thought. The other thought I wanted to share was about the RIAA. I know it's an election year, and I've been following the politics pretty closely. And I wanted to share that I don't have stats on the Republicans yet, but the RIAA, both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama have taken money from the RIAA.
Surprise,
now,
surprise.
I find that really a big concern. John Edwards didn't take any money. But I find that a big concern because I think that the RIAA is an agency that is working to take away people's rights.
Absolutely.
And, I wish that both Clinton and Obama would give back that money or realize that they've taken money from a company that is out to take away people's rights. Anyway, that's my take. Keep it short. Just thought I'd share that with you. Okay, bye.
Hey, thanks for that. And yeah, some of those outtake reels were, I mean, the back channel stuff was pretty long. But Andy's made a huge spreadsheet for me. He's got all the time clips, that stuff that he wants me to highlight. We'll keep the originals up, but we'll be cutting out little pieces and putting those up as well. You know, I don't know. I don't want to get into the political realm. And because, you know, there's I'm sure this audience splits right down the middle, left and right, you know, as the rest of the country does. And I'm, you know, I have my strong personal opinions, but I'll keep those to myself as far as the politics goes. Now, I do like talking about the political aspects of what companies are doing. Now, when it comes to like the RIAA giving money to both Hillary and to Obama, I guess the what it boils down to is that's, you know, that's that company's right, and it's their right to take money. I'm sure that there are Republicans that are running for president right now that probably have done the same. But it does disturb me that, I wonder, I think they can, what is the limit? 10 grand that they can give? I don't know what another company's, contribution limit is. And I have contributed to the, you know, the party and the candidates of my choice in the past. And it's, you know, that's my right to do that as well. But I think I think we need to look at that. We do. I mean, look, see what candidates have and haven't, you know, but I don't know. I don't know the way this whole process is going this year. You know, it looks to me like the handwriting's on the wall, who the two candidates are going to be. And it's sad because it's all about money now and who can get to the end. And, I don't know. I think there's going to be some good candidates left behind. But in all honesty, I think we ought to just scrap the whole group. Every one of the congressmen, every one of the representatives, every one of the presidential campaigns, candidates, just wipe the slate clean, not allow them to run, and get some fresh meat in there. That's what we really need. And I don't know. I'm not impressed with the whole slate. But see, I started talking. I need to shut up. So, you guys, we'll leave it at that, okay? All right, here's the next voicemail. And as always, folks, geeknews@gmail.com or call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Here's the next one. Actually, I have backed up, and we're going to skip the next one, and I'm going to go on to the one after that. Mike that called on the CFLs, the audio was so noisy. The background noise was so bad, I really can't play it. But thanks for your info on CFLs. Essentially, Mike says that he had replaced every light bulb in his house with CFLs about 4 years ago, and he's only had to replace one. So that was his take on those. But I do thank you for calling in, Mike, but the audio was so noisy, I don't think anybody could have actually heard it on the show. I had a hard time actually discerning it. So let's go ahead and move on. But I do want to thank you for your call.
Hi, Todd. This is Mike Wills from Mike's Hot Dish again.
Hey, Mike.
The Mike's Hot Dish.com. And
I have a little feedback on the domain registrar that's locking your domain names.
Oh.
I think it's called the 1,000-mile overview, it sounds like a good idea. They're protecting their customers or potential customers from losing a great domain name. Problem is, like a lot of people mentioned, they didn't have the afterthought of thinking about, well, these people might not shop with us. And so I guess from a business kind of sense of, I wonder if they're run by a bunch of jokers.
Wow. Mike, I think you chopped out. And that was two. Anyway, I'm not sure exactly what you said at the end, but I think what Network Solutions did there with this tactic or what they're doing is really naughty on them, and I would not recommend them to anyone to use as a domain register. But Mike, thanks for your call, and I know it sounds like you're on a sell, and feel free, call back again, friend, to the voicemail hotline. So here's the last voicemail for the night. Let's see if this one can play all the way through.
Hi, Todd. This is Andrew calling from Belfast in the UK.
Hey.
Todd, I just wanted to comment on the CFL bulbs. I don't know whether there's a difference between Europe and the US, but they've been kicking around here for quite a while. I think my first CFL bulb was about 10 years ago. Over here, they're now costing about £1. For a relatively low wattage one, but we're beginning to, which is about to, probably about $2 these days. I've even seen buy one get one free, so the cost's really coming down. But over here, we're starting to see bulbs that address some of the problems that previous callers have mentioned. So, for instance, some of them now are called warm start bulbs, which really come up to full brightness almost straight away. And on terms of longevity, I mean, some of the bulbs that I've had for 5-6 years now, and really aren't showing any problems or likely to fail. The second thing I wanted to mention was you were all saying about giving suppliers, well, when they're giving poor service, calling them out. Well, I just want to say that Samsung did a really good job in replacing a monitor for me. This monitor was about 30 months old into a 36-month guarantee. And they replaced it without any quibble, and they replaced it on site. They sent a courier out who delivered the replacement monitor and took my old one away. So I thought they did an excellent job, and there's absolutely no quibble when I was explaining the problem to the agent over the phone. So well done to them. Thanks again, Tom, and keep up the good work. Bye.
Hey, thanks for calling, and for those of you that didn't catch it in the beginning, he called in from Belfast, UK. Hey, thanks for the call. Definitely appreciate it, and I'm glad you had a good customer service experience with Samsung. It's nice to see that every once in a while you get treated well, and thanks for your feedback on the CFL bulbs. And I think for as £1, I think if I remember correctly, I think your bulbs are a little more expensive than what we're paying here in the United States right now. All right, I want to get into the email comments, and then I skipped a couple on the last show. I want to go back. I just didn't have time to formulate my thoughts, but I got an email from Steven. Steven says, hey, Todd, I've been listening to your show for about 2 years. I'm thinking real hard about a blog and podcast about Christianity. I've been writing articles for the past week trying to see if I can drum up enough to keep the blog going. I'm using Joomla and have articles on a schedule so I can write several in one sitting and have them published over the next few days or hours. I have some questions for you. How many articles should I publish a day for a good blog? I think you should try to blog daily. Don't do it unless you have good content, though. There's times you're not going to want to write and times that you are. Like this week, I've been busy. I've been slammed. I have only written one blog post this week, but I do have some other contributing editors that are actually writing blog posts as well. So it is it helps keep the activity up on the actual website. It says, what kind of bandwidth will a hosting account need to handle podcast downloads? Well, I'd never recommend having your media hosted at the same place that your blog is at. So have your blog on one site so you can have an inexpensive shared hosting account. Excuse me. Then have your podcast download with one of the services out there. Because if your show gets real popular, what you could really do is, run your shared hosting account out of bandwidth And not only that, the download performance could suffer. So there's a lot of services out there. We're going to be doing some stuff relatively soon with Blueberry. We're going to open up some hosting over there. So I have some options. So if you want to, you know, experiment around a little bit on your own blog, feel free to do that. But if you're looking for a full integrated podcasting solution, definitely drop me a note and I'll help you get in on the beta so that you can play around and see if it's going to work out with you. Do you make enough money to pay your server bills and all that from your sponsors? Do you make enough to live on? I do make enough to pay for my server bills. I do, at this point, I probably don't, living here in Hawaii, I don't make enough to live on. But I also have my military retirement, so that adds to my income level. I would say that it would be very difficult in the beginning for someone to make a living on their show, unless they have a show that skyrockets up in success. So, you know, just to give an example, and you have to think about this dollar-wise, a show, let's say if you're in an advertising deal and the advertising is paying, let's say, let's use a number of $30, $30 per 1,000 downloads. So you do the math on what it would take to make enough money to have a full-time income based upon that per 1,000 listeners. It could be a bit of a challenge until the audience size gets bigger. There's different ways to make money, of course, through donations, or you could ask for, you could do some type of direct marketing or CPA type deal, which we've had some podcasters have good luck and good, not luck, but have made significant amounts of money with smaller audiences. And you ask, how does Blueberry help with my podcast and show? Well, we're a good second point of presence if you so choose to list over there, or we can be a primary point of presence for your publishing. And we have a great host of services that we're going to be rolling out here soon. But basically what we do is we try to find you advertisers, and we do that legwork for you so you don't have to do it, so you can earn money and focus on your content. Don't worry about the specifics, Stephen. I guess the main thing is just do it. Go out there and start creating content. I think that will really determine, you know, and try to do 20 shows. You know, set a goal to do 20 shows and see how you're hanging at show 20. And whether you've got enough content to, you know, go to show 500. That's the key. I'm sure you'll find enough content out there. There's a lot of good content that you know, a lot of things you can talk about, philosophy and stuff. So good luck with your show. Let me know how it goes. When you get it up online, send me a link, and I will definitely, you know, help you out and give you a push over to your website. So thanks for the comment. I do appreciate that. And I want to, of course, want to help you get the information you need. All right, got an email from Thomas Wills, and I didn't tell you all this, but on the last show, I was a hurting pup. I got back from CES, and my lower back, now, most of you know I was injured pretty badly in 2004, and I've had relatively no issues. I've been good all this time. Every once in a while, a little minor back pain, but I think because we were on our feet so much and for so long, I really got it in my, bad back pain in my hip, and I was also having these just ear-splitting headaches for like 2 days. And what I think I did is Thomas sent me and said, "Hey, Todd, what's going on with these headaches? I saw you Twitter about it." He says, you know, he gave me some ideas about some experiences he'd had, and what I really think it boiled down to was not enough sleep, not enough water, and probably being on my feet too long. You know, cause, you know, just spending 10, 12 hours a day standing up, it just whacked me. So for a couple of days there after I got back, I was not a happy camper, but I'm back, I think about 99% right now and no more headaches. So, but I do want to thank, Trucker Tom, for sending me that info. Check Trucker Tom's show out at truckertompodcast.com. He does a great show. He's hosted over there at Pod Show, does a great podcast, and, you know, check his show out. All right, got some more email here. I got one from John. He says, "Hey, Todd, how to handle this company?" This is about Gizmodo. Go to their site, look for their sponsors, write an email to them stating that you'll never buy their product as long as they support this company because of CES stunt that is so unprofessional. John, well, I tell you, good idea. And if everybody doesn't like what Gizmodo did at CES, do that. Do that exactly. And, you know, tell the sponsors you're not happy with them. Okay, I got an email from Amanda. She says, a researcher from California recently blogged about a new trend in malware that is targeting BitTorrent users. I'm actually going to link this up in the show notes. Thanks, Amanda, for this. And it's basically about some spyware that's going on through BitTorrent. Got an email from Spoon. Hey, yep, that was a nice surprise to wake up this morning when I checked my account. I warned my bank about peeping, calling, and bitching with this is about DreamHost. And she was responding, or he was responding, to my blog post I put up. So there's another customer of DreamHost. They got double charged. So they weren't, he or she was not happy. Got an email from William. He says, hey, Todd, for some reason Yahoo is filtering the show notes as spam. Hope you are having a great time being retired. Yeah, I know you aren't really retired yet. So, William, thanks for that heads up. So those of you that are getting the show notes via Yahoo, make sure you go in and whitelist me over there so that the email gets through. Got an email from, from JPW is providing me a link to an article. I'll put this up in the show notes. Got an email from Greg. He said, hey, let me know when you'll be in Indy. Would love to meet you. Loved your coverage. CS, great job, Greg. And he's over at QC9AA. Oh, this is his call sign. He's looks like a ham operator on QRZ.com. So, Greg, I'll definitely check your QCL, I think that's what that's called, up on QRZ. Got an email from Holger. Say, hey, Todd, I thought I'd share a little experience I had with CFLs recently. For Christmas, I got some ceiling fans. You're right, they work great, especially for those 40-degree days with lights, and had them installed. Two are standard wall mount controls and two are remote control version. As a geek, I had to get the remote control ones. That's what I got here. We put CFLs into all of them. All work fine at first, but just before electricians left, the remote control lights in the fan stopped working. We've had replacement remote control units shipped from the manufacturer, but after doing a bit of research, I found out that the CFLs are not suitable for electronic devices. Apparently, circuitry has less resistance than incandescent bulbs, causing either the bulb to die or have a shorter life, or in my case, kill the controller. Also, since us Aussies, I guess you were talking about, were you talking about degrees or centigrade there, my friend? Also, since us Aussies were first to legislate the ban on the sale of CFLs, it kicks in here in 2010, you could probably blame us for this. And Holger sends that to me. Thanks, Holger. And actually, I think you guys probably are to blame for that. Got an email from Thomas. Hey, Todd, I need some help. I replaced the RAM in my desktop, but when I tried to boot it up, it would go to my login screen, and then it would immediately log out. I couldn't figure that out, so I did a full system restore with backup. Ever since then, I don't know where to get my data back, and I know that it's there because my computer says 60 gigabyte use. Please help. Your data should be, you did a system restore with backup. Your data should still be there. Did you do a Windows XP restore, or did you actually do a restore from an actual backup file? Please clarify that. Got an email again from Thomas, and he talks from Trucker Tom. He says, Microsoft seeks patent for Office Spy software. I'll have this link up in the show notes. Thanks for that, Tom. Got an email from Bob. He said, hey, Todd, did you get a chance to play the Belkin Podcast Studio device at CES? No, but I saw it. And it's something I had seen last year that was similar. I did not get to play with it, but I did get to see it when we were at one of the events. I'll have the link up to that in the show notes. Got an email from JP. Oh, actually, a couple of guys sent me. I want to thank JP and Jim both for the links. They didn't want me to read the emails on the air, though. Got an email from Alex. He said, hey, I was listening to your last show, 339, and heard a lot of comments about CFLs lasting only a year or two. I'm living in the UK, and I've had compact fluorescent bulbs and a couple of lamps, and have not had one go. Having living this house 5 or 6 years, lights take 5 to 10 minutes to warm up, but that's the only problem I've had with them, that and them being too heavy for spring balance lamps I have. It's possible they work better for 240 volts instead of 110. Possibly. All right, I think that's it for show notes, and we're way long tonight and kind of all over the place on show notes and also audio comments. But, folks, thanks for hanging. And, of course, geeknews@gmail.com. Geeknews@gmail.com. It's very late here in Hawaii, so I can get this wrapped up. But call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365, 619-342-7365. Thank you for all the support. We'll see you back here on Tuesday for our normal time, normal show. And get ready to take this baby on the road a week from Sunday. And look forward to doing the show on the road. We're going to be in some places where I actually started podcasting at. So that we'll do a little reminiscing when I'm out in Waco, Texas. So I'll take you back to October of 2004. And we'll talk about some of those first shows and what got me into podcasting when I'm actually out in Waco. So everyone take care. Be good. Be safe. And thanks for being part of the Ohana. Aloha.